Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Let's talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And we welcome everyone to the Wednesday edition here on The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Kay Herr alongside. You know, guy who went out to get ready for the Indianapolis 500 because he rented Ben Hur.
I rented
chariot
Ben
race
Hur?
Would be cool. Yeah, the chariot race.
I'm not related.
Back then, that was the speed thing. I mean, you know what the director told Charlton Heston? He goes, "Look, Chuck, just stay in the chariot." He says, "I guarantee you'll win the race." All right. So,
didn't they have to make turns though, where they had to slow down?
No, they went around turns as fast as they could.
Oh, okay.
Come on. You see, I am into acceleration. I am an American. I want to see such things. You bring this European attitude to the table. Oh, isn't it cool the way they slow down and there's an art to it? There's no art. Hit the accelerator and move.
Hit the gas.
Hey, hit that gas. Let's get going here. Ah, we're in the beautiful Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kierwitz 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And, of course, the Hill Street General Store hotline open at 1-800-795-9565. We would love to hear from you today. We'll be calling out to Tony Knopf, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management at 335. And Kevin will beg his little brains out to see if he can get a pair of Ducats to see the Indianapolis 500.
Listen, I'll stand in the middle of turn three.
Nah, I would pay for that. But you're offered to wash Tony's car to provide 2 months of transportation. I mean, it's sad. Just buy two tickets.
I would, but I don't know that they still exist.
You just told me a whole bunch of the grandstand are available.
Yeah, but that was yesterday. Today could be a different story.
Thank you, Scarlett O'Hara. Hillshire's General Store is 7 miles south of Seals Grove on routes 11 and 15. It is the 21st century version of the General Store. You name it, they have it at Hillshire's General Store. Go to www.hillshiresstore.com. Before we get to the nonsense that we call this show, you like that transition?
It was really good.
Yeah, thanks.
Way to go, Mr. Schmitz.
This happens on the Mark all the time, doesn't it?
What's that? Smooth transitions?
This kind of banter.
On occasion.
Lawrence, yeah. Reichley, Lawrence. You, me. Patrick. You're like, Patrick? As in Danica? No, Dan. Time now for Above the Noise. Here's Dan Patrick.
Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip at Hummel's Wharf is going to make it
impossible
for you to say no to these huge discounts. Show off your individuality with a 2013 Kia Soul starting at $15,929. Sunbury Motors Kia ordered extra 39 MPG 2012 Kia Optima Hybrids, which are discounted $5,047. Plus, you get 0% financing for 60 months. Built in the USA, 2014 Kia Serenos start at just $22,993. And Sunbury Motors Kia has 18 in stock now. Remember, all new Kias come with a 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. And at Sunbury Motors Kia, the discounts are so huge, it's going to be impossible to say no. Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip at Hummel's Wharf and at sunburymotors.com.
Well, it is great to have everybody on board. And, you know, you sit down and I had a feeling we'd have to do this kind of show today. But I now know that we have to do this kind of show today. We will still have Tony Knopf on, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management and so forth. But we do have to address the Sports Illustrated story that is coming out tonight and it's not out in its entirety yet. It's only been out in excerpt form as to what has been alleged, okay? Kevin, I welcome you in.
Wonderful to be here.
Well, that'll be the last we hear from him until 5.
Probably true with this story.
Well, I want to get it because I want to hook into Bill O'Brien's teleconference at 4:30. He will have a teleconference at 4:30 today, and I'll give you the number during the course of the break, okay?
Okay.
Because we should hear from the coach firsthand about what's going on here. But I want to get into a little bit of this. I mean, it'll dominate the show, and we will take a little bit of time because we had Tony scheduled. It's like, I'm sorry, Tony, you're out. We're not going to talk to you today. Go away.
Because he has my tickets, and I don't want to make him mad. Because he has my tickets, and I don't want to make him mad.
He's already angry with you.
Great.
What really got me is that he said something like it was not an exclusive club.
You're the president of that club. All right, moving on.
No, I'm just somebody who goes about his job. Does it in his own quiet way.
So this fun little SI story is going to be out tomorrow in the magazine.
Yes, it'll be out tomorrow in the magazine. But they've really held back in terms of what they have released about it. So let's get to, Penn State put a statement out, but let's get to at least the story about the story. No official announcement regarding Wayne Sebastianelli was made when he was removed from the football program, and school personnel involved in internal discussions say that Penn State officials began to explore how they would justify, in the absence of performance issues, the removal of a longtime doctor with an endowed professorship. According to two people with knowledge of those discussions, they say that Dave Joyner's perceived dislike for Sebastianelli is widely known in State College. I never knew that, so I've lived here forever. I didn't know that. I don't even know if that's even true. In an interview with SI, Bill O'Brien said that he made year-end recommendations for improvements to the football team that included changing medical personnel. Joyner said that he approved and implemented the changes and chose the new doctors. O'Brien said he is happy with the changes and that Scott Lynch, an orthopedic surgeon, was at most of the 15 practices that occurred in the 5 weeks. He said, I believe Dr. Lynch was there just about every day in the spring. Medical schedule Penn State gave SI indicates during the week that Lynch was expected to be present only on Wednesdays. Asked to address this apparent contradiction, O'Brien said, at the end of the day, I believe in a primary care physician being here every day, and that's something I believe in. That's one of the recommendations I made. Penn State, though, already had a primary care physician, Phil Boscia, present at every practice. That's what I believe in, O'Brien said, which is what we have and which is something we've always had. An athletic department staff member takes issue with that idea that coaches and ADs are making medical personnel decisions, saying how ironic it is that after everything that's happened a year and a half ago, that a program is much more like an NFL program, which doctors are picked by the team, than it ever was before. O'Brien hired Penn State alum Tim Bream, who worked with Joyner in the 92 Olympics, as athletic trainer in February of 2012. And Tim's been here now for 15, 16 months. Sources involved in healthcare for Penn State Athletics who spoke on the condition of anonymity say they saw Bream, who does not have a medical degree, engage in practices normally reserved for doctors. Such as giving players anti-inflammatory drugs without a prescription, lancing a boil in a player's neck. University medical sources also said that Bream told physicians to stop talking with parents of players and the doctors should not spend as much time with the team. Right. Now, I can't even comment on that because I don't even know. Okay. And I'm going to talk, but there's a lot of things I want to comment on and talk about. Okay, number one. Without question, Wayne Sebastianelli is an outstanding physician. Without question. All right. My son Mike is 100% today. He broke his femur. Wayne did the surgery. I called him right away. He was there right away. He took care of it. And Mike is 100% today after breaking his femur because of Wayne. My son Chris had an arm issue. Again, Wayne took care of that. 100% no issue in life. I will forever trust my family to Wayne Sebastianelli. All right? At the same time, there's something in this story that is absolutely not correct. I can tell you right away. Penn State had a minimum of two doctors at every spring practice this year, just like they did last year. Phil Boshia was at every practice. Wayne was at 95% of the practices. Every once in a while, something would happen. Wayne, you know, as a surgeon, you have to be, okay. Pete Seidenberg is a really good doctor. Great reputation. Great reputation. Scott Lynch, as an orthopedic surgeon, has a great reputation. Pete and Seidenberg was at every practice, and yes, Scott Lynch was there probably at half of them along the way. Minimum one-third, but at least I think at half of them. All right? But there was always a minimum of two doctors at every practice, along with a full training staff led by Tim Bream, who has an 18-year career with the Chicago Bears, in which nothing has ever been called into question. 18 years with the Bears, in which the Chicago Bears, who have poured millions of dollars into Jay Cutler, millions of dollars into Brian Urlacher, you know, have entrusted the care of those investments in Tim Bream as their trainer. And now he's back here at Penn State, where the same thing being entrusted to. Now, I'm not hanging in the training room. That's not my job to hang in the training room. Have I ever been in the training room when they've been there? Yeah. So have I seen anything unusual? No. But every coach is allowed to put together an organization that gives them, as the coach and management style, their best chance in their own comfort level. When Ed DeCellis was the basketball coach at East Tennessee State, his team physician, team doctor, was Doug Aukerman. Ed then took the job here at Penn State. In a short period of time, there was an opening on the medical staff. Doug wanted the job and to come up here and join Ed. Ed made the people at Penn State aware of Doug. Doug has a great reputation, perfect fit. It turned out he was the one that ended up getting hired for the job. And then when he was, Doug then worked as every day with football and also was the team physician for basketball. Now, no one said a word about Doug Aukerman being on the medical staff for basketball and that there was a change in the doctor overseeing basketball. Nobody said a word about that. Football, of course, brings with it a different set of scrutiny than basketball does at Penn State, and we all know that. But nobody said a word. But Doug is an outstanding physician. Same thing. I would trust my family members with Doug Aukerman, and Doug now is the lead guy at Oregon State and deserves it. He's just fabulous. Bill O'Brien was asked to go through the entire organization as he sees fit, as I talked about in that. And that included everything. That included Jack Ham and me. That included the medical staff. That included his videographer. That included his secretarial staff. That included his coaching staff. When it came time for the coaching staff, he decided to retain Larry Johnson and Ron Vanderlinden and then hire seven other people. When Ted Roof left, he then hired Anthony Midgett, and he promoted John Butler to be the defensive coordinator. In his management style, that's the group he felt comfortable with and felt he gave his players, which is the number one priority for him, the best opportunity to succeed. Todd Kulka, Kristen Lundy, and that staff at Morgan, he feels gives his players the best academic support. Thus, he has them on staff. Because above all for Bill O'Brien, how many times have we heard him talk about? It's always to him about what? The kids. Over and over, it's about the kids. Do you think that he would ever look at his players and tell them they're going to have substandard medical care? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Penn State's had great medical care for two decades and continues to do so. And that part of the article is absurd and is a soap opera.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. We'll talk more about this issue at 4:06 than Bill O'Brien's teleconference at 4:30 today. I'll give Kevin the number. We'll hook into that. We'll carry that live for you. Just to get his reaction, might as well. It happens during the show. To the Sports Illustrated arc, in which Bill, I've talked to Bill already today, so I'm not gonna make sure people know that. Bill and I talked this morning. There are inaccuracies in the article, and he's been trying to make Sports Illustrated aware of those inaccuracies, and it's been an uphill fight. But we will get to that a little bit later. First of all, let's bring in Tony Knopp, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management, who holds control over a lot of tickets. Kevin wants to get his hands on him. You know, no offense, but there appear to be a lot of tickets available for the Grand Prix or whatever the hell you want to go to.
Grand Prix.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, look, people want to see racing, okay? You want to see, I don't know what you want to see. You want to see downshifting, slower. I don't get it. To me, racing's like, you know, pedal to the metal and catch me. You want to sit at turn three. Hey, look at the downshift to 130. Hey, man, I want to be in the turn where they're going up to 200.
I just want to see somebody duck in and outbrake or outshift somebody and then accelerate past them.
Right. You're not an American. See, that's what gets me. I don't think you're an American. An American wants to see speed.
I'm not into drag racing. It's too short.
No. Americans want to see, like, they want to see racing. You want to see, I don't know what you want to watch. You know, you're kind of like a European model. You probably have, like, you secretly have euros in your wallet. All right, Tony Knopp is the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management. Tony, you deal with a lot of corporate partners. So for you, when dealing with them, what league really is the model by which a lot of people should look at in terms of how they treat their corporate partners and entities?
I think right now it's actually the NBA more than anyone else. They have a internal department that was built that's basically, it's called Team, though, Team Business Development Operations. And what they basically do is focus specifically on best practices across the league and making sure those best practices are used by all of the different teams. The NFL has a terrific setup as well for the corporate partners, but they are just starting their Team, though, process, so to speak. They've got a couple of guys over there that know what they're doing, but I'd say the NBA.
That's interesting you say that. Now, who has to now pick up their game in order to make sure that they're accommodating everyone, including the corporate partners?
Well, without making enemies, I think Major League Baseball is a terrific media player. There's a couple of things that they're doing that maybe aren't as great for the company when it comes to – it's terrific for the company when it comes to Major League Baseball. They're the leader when it comes to that.
Right.
But it's difficult for the company when it's other providers. Like, for example, you know, the Washington Nationals, who we love, have an RFID card. Basically, you get a branded credit card that's a Washington Nationals card, and that's where all your tickets go. And that's fantastic for me, you, and the, you know, regular fans out there.
Sure.
But when you're, you know, AT&T or JP Morgan or one of those companies, you're not going to send all of your customers nine cards for the nine local teams. Doesn't make sense. I think there's got to be some steps taken.
There really has been an uptick in sports sponsorships, hasn't there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, over the last few years. There was a report a couple days ago showing that it has come back, that the numbers, the $2.32 billion or something, are significantly higher than they've been in the past and continuing to grow. And I think that that's it's a reflection of the fact that people just want to align their brand with something they're passionate about, right? It's the reality is almost every conversation starts the same way the conversation we just had about, you know, Mother's Day and baseball. It's something that we all have in common, something that we're all passionate about, and something that we grew up in.
Now, let's go to the other part. Obviously, around here, college football is very, very passionate. What about pricing in college football, especially when you look, for example, you know, here it's, you have 31 sports here at Penn State. Two of them make money. That's football, men's basketball. The others do not at this stage. And most places, it's football that does, and basketball probably does. What about pricing, though, in stadiums, and what do you see in that regard with clients?
You know, it's interesting you say that. I bet a school like Penn State, it's football makes money, basketball makes a little bit of money, but it's like 90-10. I bet that's the case there, and that's been the case for a lot of places.
Yeah, that would be close, you know, to it, right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and football is king. I mean, there's the map that came out from Deadspin last week showing the highest paid public office, a public job in each state, and it's something like 35 of the states. It's the football coach at the local university that is the highest paid public figure that there is.
Right.
Now, as far as the pricing goes in the college thing, it goes back to what you were just mentioning. I was on a panel a couple of weeks ago with a guy from Foley and Lardner who brings stadiums to new cities, right? He brought the Nationals to Washington, and he did the Guggenheim deal for the Dodgers. And he was quoted, he said that he had a customer looking at building either a convention center or a baseball stadium within the city, and that customer was the city, the municipality. And the question he asked the municipality was, do you remember the first time you walked into a convention center? Well, of course not. Do you remember the first time you saw a baseball field? Well, yeah, of course. I saw it with my dad and, you know, that sort of thing. And that translates over to college football more than any other sport, more than the NFL, more than anything else. You will see people with alignment to college sports that is unmatched in other events, other entities, anything else. And it creates pricing on the ticket side that it's so strange and different than anybody understands. I mean, we all know that, I assume, at Penn State, like anywhere else, you know, the boosters get the best seats, right? And you have to be able to manage that booster. How much money are they putting in to get those tickets? And then the face value of the ticket's $100, even
right,
though you and I both know it's not going for less than $700, right? And that's what we're seeing. We're just seeing this, you know, in the bigger games, the haves versus have-nots, when the haves are playing the haves, when A&M is playing Alabama, you know, the pricing is just going through the roof, and people are having no problem paying it.
And then you see Texas A&M, for example, they will expand their stadium to 102,000. Now the NFL,
that's Big Ten country right there. I mean, when it comes to the size of the stadium, that's something that the Big Ten's been doing for a little while.
Oh, exactly. Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State are all over 100,000 in seating capacity. Nebraska is going to go over 90,000 in seating capacity. Mm-hmm. The NFL won't do that, though. They like to keep that number at a reasonable, you know, what they consider to be reasonable. How much does the blackout have to do with that, and also demand?
I think there's two ways around it. Like one way around the blackout is, you know, premium seating and some of those. You can find ways to add seats that don't count towards the blackout, and they also don't count towards the revenue share, right? That's half the benefit of some of the suites and club seats and a number of the different leagues is that those are exempt from the revenue share as far as revenuing with the rest of the teams in the league. But I think there's just too much risk on the NFL side. And though the NFL has significant brands that people love, like the Eagles, like the Bears, they don't have that tie, you know, for life across as many brands as, say, a Penn State does, as, say, a Michigan does, as, say, I mean, everybody has a connection to them. My mother went to Michigan. Sorry, guys, but my mom went to Michigan. My little sister went to Michigan State. So we're Big Ten. We know the Big Ten well.
Right.
And for that reason, they just know that the ambiance, the experience, the game day experience is totally different with them than it is from any other sport, not just the NFL. They'll continue to do so. You guys build a 150,000-person stadium in Happy Valley or a 200,000-person big house, they'd fill it up.
Right, and they will do that. You mentioned the Deadspin article on highest-paid employees within a state, although what was interesting is that – I was trying to point out last week they were talking about Bill O'Brien at Penn State, and part of that is that people don't realize is that he's a state employee in that he's in the state retirement system, but the athletic department's autonomous at Penn State, so they pay his salary.
Right,
they pay his salary out of the athletic department revenues. It just turns out he'd be classified a state employee because he's in the state retirement system. That's the reason why. So that's kind of an odd little walk down the balance beam.
I think they're making the argument that, you know, if the actual entity exists on taxpayer dollars, then, you know, by abstract tie-in, that person would be a public employee, right? Because if there was no taxpayer dollars for Penn State, then it would cease to exist. I mean, obviously, there might be a way around it, but that's what the institution is. And so I think that's what the argument is, but you're right, and it's very different there. And there's a couple of other instances.
I think Penn State, as a university, the athletic department gets zero from the state. The athletic department gets zero from the state. The university, I think, gets 4% from the state total. So that's why it's kind of a fine line here.
Right, absolutely. And I think the goal is just to point out the goal of the map was more to point out the absurdity of the modern condition, so to speak, of the people who don't understand what value a sport has, right? Because I think their goal in that is to find that person that looks at that and says, this is so ridiculous. You know, we have, you know, school budgets that are getting hacked and we're paying Nick Saban $8 million a year. And that's ridiculous when, you know, it's just a short-sighted way of viewing the world. It's a short-sighted way of understanding exactly how much benefit financially and how much benefit when it comes to the actual region and the economic impact that those sports are actually having, which is significantly more than most anything else, right? The reality is that money is coming back 10 times over, as you've proven with the fact that the athletic department is turning a significant profit and paying their own bills.
Right. That's the next part, too, is that you deal with corporate partners all the time, Tony, and in dealing with them, they have to feel like they're getting a return for their financial investment. Across the board, are you sensing that satisfaction that there is that proper return for the investment they're putting into teams with their corporate money?
No, 100%. You know, Bernie Mullen, who was former CEO down at the Phillips Arena, and he worked at the NBA directly with David Stern forever, he made a great point a couple of weeks ago when he said, you know, when people see a sign at Penn State, they think, what a waste. I can't believe that company is paying all this money for that sign, whether it's, you know, Bank of America investing $25 million in the Yankees, or, you know, Wells Fargo doing the Quail Hollow tournament when, you remember, a couple of years ago, they actually took their name off the tournament because of the public backlash. Well, the reality is that the average fan is not understanding, well, okay, how much is all of the banking for that event and all of the things tied to the event and the insurance that goes with that event worth? Right, okay, they're paying $25 million, but they're getting back $15 million right there. How much is it worth to have your brand tied to the people that are coming, and what kind of lift do we see in that brand on a day-to-day basis? And when you actually walk through that, you know, he made a very prescient quote. He said, I am tired of standing jelly-legged, of people telling me they're standing jelly-legged in front of the press or in front of their executives when this is one of the strongest value propositions you can make. There's a reason the sponsorships on sports is higher than it's ever been in the last year, and there's been a significant growth because there's tremendous return for it. People aren't doing this for fun. Right, they have bottom lines they have to hit, and they found something that makes the money, and they're going to continue to pull that lever. And the benefit of that is to everybody. They continue to pull the lever with Penn State. They continue to have more brand alignment with a brand that people love and will always love. It has been part of the community, and that'll continue. And I think that'll continue to grow, especially as the media rights grow, especially as it becomes easier to consume information around the teams and the 31 sports.
And you mentioned, for example, a Quail Hollow, Wells Fargo returning as the sponsor there. Look at Tampa with the Outback Bowl. It's called the Outback Bowl. That's the name of the bowl game from Outback Steakhouse. To the point that when Chick-fil-A, the bowl championship committee went to Chick-fil-A and said, hey, look, you do have to put Peach back into the game, you know, just in case there's a switch in the sponsorship. That way there's an identification with the city on the bowl. But it's the Chick-fil-A Bowl. I mean, people know what it is.
And it's one of the best attended. Believe it or not, that is the best attended bowl game outside of the BCS.
Yeah.
Outside of the big bowls. People don't realize the Chick-fil-A Bowl has tremendous attendance.
They're sold out every year, 72,000 plus.
Yeah, they're doing a fantastic job. They draw the right teams. They do it in the right venue. They're doing fantastically. I'll be interested what they do when the new football stadium is built down there. But, you know, the bowl in Tampa Bay, the Outback Bowl, that's what it is. I know it as the Outback Bowl. So do you. You know, we don't know it as the OSI Bowl. That's the, you know, father company of the Outback.
Right.
And it's a local business that, you know, they're in Tampa. That's where their headquarters are. So there's a significant value there. And I think that the conversation of making this a commodity that changes over, it's awfully difficult to do that. I mean, we're all fans, but, you know, it took an awful long time to stop referring to Enron as Enron and as Minute Maid Park.
Right. Right?
The same thing, of, you know, I'm from the Bay Area. I'm from San Francisco. And there are I hear five different names when it comes to the ballpark there. I hear people call it Pac Bell still. I hear people call it SBC, even though it was only that for about a year. Mm-hmm. And I hear people call it AT&T. All the same company now.
Right.
But it's changed names three times in 13 years.
Here's
a question for you. What's the name of the football stadium in Miami right now?
I think it's Dolphin Stadium.
Dolphin Stadium, even though it's been four other things in the last 10 years.
Yeah. But here's the next part. You're right about the changes. Is there a value, in your opinion, to naming rights on a stadium?
Yes, I think there's significant value to naming rights on a stadium. I think there's two pieces to discuss there. One, put the Peach Bowl back in the Chick-fil-A Bowl. You know, well, you can't put it back in the donkey on that one, right? The reality is you guys made the mistake as the NCAA and as the bowl itself of allowing somebody to rename that bowl as their bowl without keeping Peach in there.
Right.
Damage is done, right? You're not going to be able to go back on that. It's going to take quite some time. So somebody there should have seen the foresight that, you know, these corporate partners change over, and we're probably going to have some kind of identifier in there that people understand that there's a brand to this bowl. Because if it changes and it's not the Chick-fil-A Bowl anymore,
mm-hmm.
it goes back to the Peach Bowl, entire generation of people who don't know what the Peach Bowl is.
Right.
Never heard of it.
Right.
Right. As far as the naming rights deals go, some of them are great. Some of them are absolutely terrible. And it all comes down to how those are activated. You know, there's examples of, you know, when we know about the Allianz deal falling through with the New York Giants and Jets, right? They were going to name MetLife Stadium the Allianz
right.
Stadium. Allianz has naming rights, you know, across the pond in Europe. At the Allianz is one of the biggest in Germany. It's where Bayern Munich plays.
Right.
And that deal was $25 million a year, but they were going to get all the insurance business back, which was $14 million from the two teams. Then they were going to get to activate around the actual park itself, around the game day itself, and they'd see a lift that goes along with that. And there are people out there, the Ray Bednars of the world, the you know different companies of the world, Turnkey, that's what they track and understand. And the ROI on those things is tremendous. But then when you have people like you know Power Balance and Landshark Beer who – they see somebody else doing it and figure, well, all I got to do is throw my name up there. It can be an abject disaster.
Right.
I mean, it can be a complete waste of their money and turn into something that is a black eye on both sides. And that's why you've seen this entire industry rise around naming rights deals. Because it's not about just saying, okay, I've got Jerry Jones's new park and I just want it named. Because they've got a lot at stake here. They need somebody who is fiscally viable, who's going to be around for a while, who understands how they're going to activate around it. Like, for example, Wasserman did the deal for Levi's at the San Francisco Stadium.
Right.
And they already started activating it. If you didn't know, they announced it at 5:01 p.m.
How about one last topic? The 500,000 ticket request for one game in the championship Champions League final.
As
you mentioned Munich in the previous answer. They had 500,000 requests for one game.
For one game that is in another country. I mean, this is Bayern playing against Dortmund, which are both German teams who play in Germany, who just played last weekend, playing in London at the end of the month, and one team had 500,000 requests. I guess that's the answer that you know you're drawing a conclusion to, is that, yeah, sports are worth that much. I mean, 500,000 people want to travel to another country to attend a game that they could have seen this last weekend.
It's remarkable, and it's a great for you. I mean, it's a great business to be in, because I was mentioning the other day, for example, I believe the season finales of NCIS and NCIS Los Angeles were on last night. Except for those which are cliffhangers that lead to the next season in September. Everything else during the season, the previous 21 episodes, are wrapped up in an hour. And I think for the most part, with a little twist here and there, you and I know how it's going to be wrapped up.
Oh, yeah.
Sports, you don't know how it's going to be wrapped up. I did a Penn State-Michigan basketball game. Michigan ended up in the national championship game. Penn State beat them late in the season.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Michigan lost three games in 2 weeks there.
Yeah, you're a Michigan guy, so I know you're a family
background. My mom went to Michigan, but if I had to decide, I'd be more state than I'd be Michigan.
I hear you.
But I'm a Pac-12 guy. I went to school in the Pac-12. So.
But at the same time, there's a mystery to sports that makes it intriguing. I think that's why it's become, because there's no script.
It's the original reality show.
Yeah.
It really is, in that the emotion and the drama affects real life, right? When you're watching a character, right? We all want the good guy to win in the end, but when he doesn't, there's no translation of that occurrence with what happens for the rest of their lives. We watch Chris Webber call timeout. That affects his life forever. Right. We're still talking about it now. We're not talking about a fictitious character. He's walking around every day with people saying timeout, I'm sure, to this day,
right,
including some of the guys who work here who are Carolina guys.
Right.
And that's what changes it all, and that's why brands need to be a part of it. You know, you see this entire industry building up around, you know, product placement and, you know, let's make sure that, you know, the lead character in the hottest show out there, The Big Bang Theory, is drinking a Coca-Cola.
Right.
And we're going to pay money to do this. Well, you go a step further with sports because it's actually a part of it, right? They're not drinking it because it's in the script. They need Gatorade while they're playing. They need to rehydrate, and you're going to see that as part of it.
Right.
And there's just so much value in sports that I think Bernie's right, and I think everything that's being said is right. You know, I don't take issue with the football coach making that much money at all, because it's worth every penny and then some to not only them, but to the university, to the area around the university, and to the fiscal health of that area. Right, and it's something that you don't see anywhere else, and we'll continue to see. There's no TV show that's going to encourage somebody or make them feel so rabid about it that 500,000 people are going to go through the process of requesting a ticket to go to another country to watch their team play. I mean, you have to assume there's another 500,000 people who didn't fill out the form that would go if they could. Right, there's significant dollars in it, and it'll continue to be for that reason. We love it. It's the ultimate drama.
Tony, you know how much I always enjoy these talks. Thanks so much. Appreciate the time very much. We look forward to talking with you again.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Tony Knopp, CEO, Spotlight Ticket Management, who once again denied Kevin a trip to the Indy 500 altar.
Painful. Just painful.
You talking about Corporation Day. That's painful.
There's always next year.
No, I was told this was the last one.
I'm not even going to respond.
Next half hour, we'll talk about the Sports Illustrated article, Bill O'Brien's teleconference bottom of the hour, so all of you get to hear his comments on the story. As we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay.